Chapter 4 looks at legal concepts. Very important in some areas, in particular, legal concepts such as that of contract are extremely important, of course. Trust, from an investment point of view, where assets are being held, managed by a trustee, granted by a settlor, but being managed on behalf of the beneficiaries. All of these are very important, of course, when managing clients' money. So, first concept to look at is a legal person. So a legal person is that which has rights, protections, privileges, responsibilities under law, like a natural person. So here we're really talking, of course, about companies that have legal personality. So generally a legal person, like a company, is considered separate from its individual members and can be subject to separate legal obligations, for example, in terms of paying tax. So essentially it's the legal person that engages with the legal system, so it can be sued itself or can sue, it can enter into legal contracts, and it can incur debt and legally own assets. So you need to become a legal person to be able to engage with the legal system. Now the legal person, again thinking about a company there, shields its members from direct personal liability. So it's the company that has liability and has its own separate and distinct legal person, distinct from the members within the company itself. So as well as companies, sovereign states and cooperatives would be other examples, but of course the main one that we would come across is a company, of course. Now a power of attorney is a legal instrument which allows one person to take decisions on behalf of another. And these usually relate to two things. One is the financial decisions that might be made, and other relate to health and personal welfare. So this is really generally where the person who is the subject of the power of attorney isn't deemed capable in themselves to make their own decisions. So a responsible person is given the power of attorney to make those decisions for them. So basic laws of contract and agency. So importantly, a contract has two key elements. There needs to be offer and acceptance. So the contract begins with an offer and ends with an unconditional acceptance. So if acceptance has been given contingent on something happening in the future, that doesn't constitute unconditional acceptance, and the contract is not perfected, it is not complete at that point in time. So that's an important thing, to have both offer and acceptance. There needs to be some consideration, goods and services, for example, on one hand, and payments on the other. Otherwise, if there isn't any consideration or material consideration, the contract may not be deemed to be legally enforceable. So in any contract, generally you have to pay at least £1 to make the contract legally enforceable, because there needs to be some consideration for it. And also, finally, there needs to be intention. So there needs to be clear intention that both parties intended to become bound to the terms of the contract. So in terms of the contract itself, the terms and conditions need to be specified clearly, so you can't have vague and ambiguous terms there. So if there are terms which aren't clear, then it may well be that the contract is declared legally unenforceable. Most contracts are written, but a contract can be upheld even if it's made verbally. But in certain cases, some contracts must be written. So for example, property or tenancy agreements must be written, otherwise they're not legally enforceable. In terms of discharging the obligations under a contract, a contract can end in four different ways. By performance, so all of the obligations under the terms of the contract have been fulfilled, that both parties agree to discharge the contract for whatever reason. If the contract is frustrated, if it actually becomes impossible to reasonably fulfill the terms of a contract, then it can be discharged for that reason. And lastly, if there's been a breach of the contract, so if one party fails to fulfill its obligations to the other, or if work is defective, etc., or if there's some intention to not fulfill the obligations, then there's deemed to be a breach of the contract, and then remedies will be sought in that instance. Property ownership really falls into two categories. Legal ownership, so whose name would be on the title deeds of a house, for example. And the other type of ownership is the beneficial or equitable ownership of it. Who enjoys the usufruct of a particular asset is the beneficial ownership. So we say that the beneficial ownership is the most valuable part of the ownership rights, in fact. There are different ways that property can be held, either by absolute ownership. There can be tenants in common, where each has the right to sell their share, or there can be joint tenants. Now this is a rather difficult situation, because joint tenants can only sell their shares by giving notice to the other joint tenants. So that's a rather difficult scenario. So in most cases it's tenants in common that tend to be the arrangement that is put in place. Insolvency and bankruptcy. So importantly, insolvency is really an accounting definition where a legal person is unable to fulfill their obligations or their liabilities as they fall due. Perhaps they don't have enough cash flow, for example. So it's really an accounting definition where a company has run out of money and cannot meet its liabilities as they fall due. That may well then result in the legal situation or legal state of bankruptcy. So really it's generally where we feel or it's deemed that a legal person, a firm or an individual can't recover from their insolvency. In this case, the liquidation of assets will occur, and whatever creditors the entity has will be distributed with the assets that result from this. Now, importantly, the bankruptcy process can actually be instigated by any creditor, in fact, at which point a court will appoint a receiver. A receiver is responsible for administering the affairs of the legal person, a company or individual, in order that the maximum value can be obtained for the creditors of the bankrupt person. So wills and intestacy. A will is a written document, so again it's something that needs to be written, can't be valid otherwise, and describes how a person's estate is to be distributed after their death. So once a person has died, we call their assets their estate. So the conditions for a will to be valid: it must be written, it must be signed and witnessed, it must be made by a person over 18 years old, that person must be a sound mind, and must have the ability to understand the consequences of making a will, and the will must be made without any external undue influence or pressure. So probate is where we establish the estate's ownership. So after someone's died, the entitlement under the estate are established by the probate process before the assets are distributed. So it's the executor of the will that's responsible for the probate service. So they will identify the beneficiaries and determine the proportions of the estate that are to be distributed to the beneficiaries of the deceased. Intestacy is where someone dies without a will or without a valid will, and we call them dying intestate. So there are laws here, intestacy laws. So on a statutory basis, this determines how the estate is distributed and it has a fixed order according to the next of kin. So those closest to the deceased will get a larger proportion of the estate. Trusts are important, particularly when it comes to children under the age of 18. So this is where an arrangement is made by the original owner of some assets, the settlor is the official name, and they transfer property to another person, the trustee, who manages it within this legal structure which is a trust, but on behalf of specified persons. So the settlor will specify who the beneficiaries are, so that when they come to the age of 18 or 21 or whatever the settlor decides, then the assets in the trust will be distributed accordingly. So a bare trust is where assets belong to the beneficiary and are managed by a trustee. So from the point of view of this, any income and capital gains tax are treated as if they already belong to the beneficiary. So we look at the beneficiary's taxation status when deciding how the assets within the bare trust will be determined from a tax perspective. This is generally used for children or persons with diminished capacities, for example. Interest in possession is where we have income from assets that we already own, so used, for example, in wills, for spouses, for example. And the idea is to protect beneficiaries from claims on a survivor's estate. So important point there to protect the remainder men, as they are called in that case. So this is where someone has set up a trust, the beneficiary has died, and then what happens to the estate? How is it passed on to other beneficiaries is what's determined there. Discretionary trust is where the distribution of the assets is determined by the trustee himself. So the trustee has discretion over how the assets in the trust are distributed, rather than being very clearly specified by the settlor. Finally, a charitable trust. So a charity is defined as something that is beneficial to the community, either a local community or the overall community, for example, environmental charities. So a different sort of legal status there, our charitable trusts.